to the But Here We Go podcast, coming at you from But Here We Go Studios in Dallas, Texas.
It's been a minute.
It's been at least 4 days.
4 days?
Yeah.
Since what?
Since our last podcast.
4 days?
At least.
Joe, it's been 2 weeks.
Okay, so it's at least 4 days.
4 days?
Hey, 4 days is... it. 2 weeks is, in fact, more than 4 days.
Right.
But so there we go.
Significantly longer than 4 days. Well, we've just been busy.
Yeah. Like I said, April, busy month. It is a busy month.
Well, things we've missed. What do we miss? We missed Earth Day. We didn't even get to do our big annual, let's make everyone go to Earth Day podcast episode.
We did go to Earth Day and we brought people to Earth Day. Even brought out-of-towners to Earth Day.
True. We brought a lot of people.
We brought so many people. We got stuff.
Did you think Earth Day was better than last year, worse than last year, or the same as last year?
Okay. Two things.
And by Earth Day, I mean the EarthX convention.
Yes. I thought it was, in fact, better. I think it was better because it's back at Fair Park, and I prefer that.
Right.
I do feel like we had to rush through it. Because somebody had a birthday party that we had to go to.
Right. Jake was invited to a birthday party.
And
we still spent like 3.5 hours there.
Yeah, but we did not get through everything.
Okay.
And I am the type who I want to go to every single thing.
Right. Did you get anybody to get on your podcast from it?
So far, I have sent several emails.
Okay.
I think 4 or 5.
What was your favorite free thing that you got?
Favorite free thing? So I would have really liked to get that magnet that Jake got, but I didn't make it to that booth.
What magnet?
Yeah, he got a little magnet keychain.
Oh, so I would have liked that. You could just take that from him.
I could, but he'll notice.
Just borrow it.
So there's that. Other than that, I am not sure I got anything that was like profound. I mean, I'm wearing one of the shirts. I've worn multiple shirts. One of them super comfortable, but kind of weird to wear as a main.
Do you have your hat for your sponsor, not sponsor?
No, it'll be Innovation Week as the sponsor.
Okay, deal.
But so the clothes are always nice because free clothes
are
fun. I just
love like a good painting shirt or, you know, like shirt that I don't care about if I'm doing yard work or something.
Yeah, exactly. And then I really enjoy all the free plants. So this year
aren't they just like trash trees though?
No.
Are they live oaks?
No.
There
were some live oaks. And for our guests, we are not fans of live oaks.
And for our guests, if you ask any landscaper in DFW, they are also not fans of live oaks.
Which is so weird that SMU, like,
those
almost
are live
exclusive,
oaks?
They almost exclusively have live oaks.
Is that what those big trees are live oaks?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's so weird. I think it's because they're, like, in evergreen, so they lose their leaves actually around this time. But they just kind of grow new ones and push the old ones out.
Right. I think for my property management days, the issue with live oaks, if I remember correctly, is that live oaks take up a bunch of water. And so they actually really mess up your foundation. And so they always cause us foundation problems, which I guess is why they don't like live oaks.
And I personally don't like them because they're pokey. And
they're not nice looking.
And the acorns they put off are small and... from what I hear, I haven't actually tried any, but from what I hear, they are less desirable as a food source.
Interesting. I'm just going to interject here because I've already coughed a couple times. The other reason why we didn't podcast is I completely lost my voice due to some sort of allergy or cold. And when I say completely lost my voice, I mean like I literally could not say a word. And it
not
was
even
problematic.
One.
No, like there was like I – there was – for like half a day, like I was struggling. Like I couldn't even answer the phone to talk to people. And I was like doing sign language to Jacob. It was bad. So anyway, if I'm coughing, that's just the remnants of that whole situation. Anyway.
Yep.
Earth Day. Did you
really
just eat a cookie right now?
Yeah. besides that, the trees, they're not trash trees. They're fun trees. And all of the seeds that we got. We got a lot of wildflower seeds, which we have to plant in the fall. And then we also got several different things that we can plant for the garden. So that's fun. We're going to be able to grow some food.
Already growing some food.
Already grown food, but we'll have more. Not things that we got from Earth Day.
Right. Or are they organic seeds?
I don't think so.
That's the one thing that I find interesting is that I don't see a lot of like organic booths at the Earth X convention.
Yeah, I think and this is actually, I was on a call earlier this week where somebody brought up hybrid vehicles. I don't know. It was a geothermal call and they brought up hybrid vehicles. I was like, not the time, dude. Like,
wrong.
You're in the wrong place. You're in the wrong webinar. But just pointing out the simple fact that everybody who has a hybrid vehicle has a significant savings in terms of CO2 footprint immediately.
Okay.
With essentially no change to their habits. And to me, I feel like that I feel like that is what Earth Day is really pushing. Mm-hmm. It is saying, hey, try and grow just a few vegetables. Right. So that way you can have like a little bit of food nearby. Hey, here's a few trees. Go plant another tree. Because how many people do you actually know who has planted a tree in their life?
Right. It's more of like, hey, how can we make earth saving more palatable to the average
What are those quick wins that we can do? We can give out a random tree and hope somebody plants it. Or we can just convince somebody that the idea of recycling is cool. Just like really, really basic stuff.
Right.
And then there used to be, I remember the year that I was eating crickets when it was like huge before COVID. That year there was a booth that had a backyard renewable natural gas processor. So you basically threw in compost, you would throw it all in and it would generate natural gas, like biogenic methane for you that you could then use for your cooking.
That's really cool. But that also reminded me they didn't have a tiny house village this time.
No,
they didn't have one last year either. Are tiny houses no longer in vogue? Has the trend sailed?
I think that yes and no. I think that trend is over. Now it's RV living.
Oh, yeah.
But I also think that COVID kind of killed that. Like people don't want to let a bunch of people into their house.
Right. That makes sense.
And then they were charging, $5, $10?
Oh, they were.
And I think that was the beginning of the end. Charging people to go into other people's houses.
I can watch a HGTV show on tiny houses. I don't need to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to save my $5, put it towards a tiny house.
Okay. Final thoughts before we move on.
For Earth Day.
I mean, it's late at night already.
It's a lot of fun. Everybody should go. I'm excited. I almost feel like it is that primer, that exciting pep rally for dumpster diving. I feel like that's part of it. And especially now, because it's not like so much stuff. It's really more like, let's go get free things.
We need a crew this year dumpster diving.
We got to get that crew.
If you're
especially
interested in being on the crew, let us know.
Yeah. I'll be coming home and then that night we should start.
Okay.
And then we got a few days. Then we've got our garage sale. And then what are we going to do? We're going to collect things and let it sit around? I don't think so.
No. Garage sale. Boom.
Garage sale.
Okay, you ready? This one I think you're going to...
What do you got? Okay. What do you got for me?
Don't get too excited, but this is the headline. A company says it added mammoth DNA to a plant-based burger and that they tasted it, and it is much more intense and meatier than the cow version.
Much more intense and meatier?
Yeah. So this is throwback to our last episode where you were very upset with the fact that they did not even eat that meatball.
Wait, so they've added mammoth DNA to a plant-based burger?
Let me read it. The Belgian startup Paleo says it added woolly mammoth protein to a plant-based burger and that the result was much more intense than with cow. The company uses precision fermentation technology to develop different animal heme proteins, including that which are found in beef, chicken, pork, lamb, tuna, and even mammoth. Anyway, they did it. We've tasted mammoth. It didn't kill anybody. So meatball people can shove it.
Yeah, those meatball people are weak. They're a bunch of weak people.
Though this article would like to make clear that it is unclear if mammoth protein will ever actually make it to grocery store shelves.
I'm just really confused and questioning the idea of it made it meatier.
Like, what does that mean? Like, that sounds what like
What does
subjective.
That mean? That's not a scientific term. Like, did it have more flavor? Was it a stronger flavor?
Maybe they're talking about texture. Maybe it made the plant-based burger more textured.
More like meat.
More like meat, yeah. In that case, more meatier would seem like an appropriate way to describe that.
Yeah. You know, it's less just planty, a meatier more flavor. Meatier. The thing that I don't like about that, I think... Going back way back to that show that we watched on Netflix, mm-hmm. the lab grown meat, mm-hmm. they always had trouble because it was all protein.
Right.
Whereas when you think about a good steak,
it's fat.
There is the fat inside, and it's the marbleizing of the fat, which is, I guess that is from the actual physical animal living its life and the way that it personally is growing.
It's its soul.
So it is a very much an animal by animal basis.
Right.
So how are you going to, even if you have something that's completely homogeneous in terms of marbleization and they're all the same, how do you get marbleization into lab grown meat, whether it's plant based or whether it's lab grown?
You don't.
Yeah, and that's always going to be a problem.
Right.
Maybe it'll work for ground meat.
I'm just going to bring back our other point. I think we should be focusing on making vegetables and starches tastier than alternative meats. Because that's really all. It is just faking people out to make you think that you're eating meat. So just get people to actually like
vegetables.
Vegetables.
Yeah.
Instead of focusing all this time and money on alternative meat.
You know how they could probably do that? Teaching us about fun vegetables. Like everybody eats cucumber, zucchini, broccoli, cauliflower, romaine lettuce. Those are just like
the staples.
What you eat. But tonight, our salad had nasturtiums in it. It had those mustard greens, and then it had romaine lettuce.
Right, right.
But that is so much more enjoyable. It's like fun.
Right.
You have this fun salad with all of these different things. But I've never seen nasturtiums in the store. I didn't even know you could eat them until like last year.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm sure you can buy them somewhere, I would think. Like maybe from like a fancy, like Italy or something like that. Maybe.
So
like like how you would buy sprouts. Maybe yeah. It's just more of a delicate plant or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't... Because like I think... you grow up and you watch a TV or whatever and there's that like stereotype of like kids not liking their vegetables.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to know where that came from. Because Jake has never had an aversion to vegetables. He, has things that he doesn't like, but it's never been like, oh my gosh, it's green, I won't eat it. He's always liked vegetables. And most, if not all, baby foods are vegetables. So at what point do children decide that they don't like vegetables? Or is that something that we've just assumed? And... Because I know, kids are picky. Like, that makes sense to me. And, that is just, a stage that most kids go through. But in terms of, because like I know adults, like full-fledged adults who will tell me, I don't eat vegetables. And I'm like, I don't understand where they're, because like vegetables can be cooked in so many different ways. Like,
yeah.
And I can understand like, hey, maybe carrots truthfully are not my jam. Like I like shaved carrots in like a salad or whatever. But like I will eat like steamed carrots and grilled carrots or whatever. They're just not my favorite. But that's just one vegetable out of like a bazillion other vegetable options. And so to just like do a blanket statement of like, I don't like vegetables is like a bold claim, you know? Yeah. Like that's you're just like deciding not to eat an entire food group.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I agree. Doesn't make sense to me.
Fun fact, did you know you could eat the greens of carrots?
Can you really? That makes sense. I don't like bunnies eat the greens of carrots.
I don't know what bunnies eat, man. Like, I have no idea.
Anyway, we digress. Here's the thing I want to talk about.
Oh, I thought you wanted to talk about the meat.
Sorry, I'm coughing. We've talked about meat so much on this podcast. No more follow-up questions. I want to talk about the Spanish athlete who lived 500 days in that cave by themselves. Which you saw.
Yeah, what's up with that?
What is up with that? 500 days. Okay, she, no outside contact.
What do you mean no outside contact?
That's what I'm reading the highlights because I know that a research team was assisting her with like food and stuff. So I don't understand how there would be no outside contact. So let me see. Okay, a 50-year-old Spanish extreme athlete emerged on Friday from a 500-day challenge living 230 feet deep in a cave outside Granada with minimal contact outside. Okay, this is minimal contact. Wearing dark glasses and smiling as she adjusted the light and blah, 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 blah. She did not want to come out. She said that time had flown by and she did not want to come out. When they came to get me, I was asleep. I thought something had happened. I said, already? Surely not. I hadn't finished my book, she said. She's a freaking slow reader, then. She hadn't finished her book. She broke a world record for the longest time spent in a cave, an experiment monitored by scientists studying the human mind and circadian rhythms. She was 48 when she went into the cave and celebrated two birthdays alone underground. Do you think she's an introvert?
Was she writing a book or was she reading a book?
Reading a book.
Are you sure it was reading?
No. He just says, I hadn't finished my book. Was she writing a book? I feel like it would have told us.
Yeah, I don't know. Writing a book about her experience, about her enlightenment from 500 days of solitude in a cave.
Would you sign up for something like that? Would that be something that interested you? She surely has to be introverted. That 500 days alone in a cave. She has to be an introvert
that has no family.
Right. That's like signing up for solitary confinement.
That's like signing up for a trip to Mars.
Like that. Well, you're with other astronauts when you go to Mars.
True.
But like literally, she was in solitary confinement for 500 days and didn't have a psychological breakdown. She enjoyed it. To which point, we should be analyzing her because she sounds kind of like a sociopath.
I think they were the whole time, weren't they?
For sociopathic tendencies?
I mean, they were probably analyzing her physiology and her physical impact and effects and also the psychological.
What do you think she did in the cave all day?
The one picture that it looked like she was doing some resistance band training.
For 500 days in a dark cave.
I mean, there's so many questions. Like, does she get to walk around and explore? How much light does she have?
Do you think she was just naked the whole time?
No.
Or does she feel the need to clothe herself?
No, it would be too cold. You would have to clothe yourself.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you can't. It would be, 230 feet down, I would guess it was like 50s or 60s.
Do you think she got to a point where she forgot, like, mixed up day and nighttime, and it was just like...
That's what the circadian rhythm part is?
Well, when are we going to get the research out of it?
I don't even know.
So many questions.
She just came out. My guess is if you're waiting for a peer-reviewed published paper, Maybe 2 years.
Oh, I said 10. 2 years. I just want to say.
Yeah, no, not 10 years. 2 years.
If you ever hear, and this is not necessarily for Joe, if you're listening to this podcast and you hear that Ali Battir has signed up to be in anywhere alone for.
That's fake news.
That's someone's kidnapped me and something terrible has happened to me. Ask Joe. Go typically, take care of the husband is the first suspect in a disappearance. So track down Joe, but I did not do that on my own volition. Just saying. I don't think he would kill me. Don't worry.
There could be a lot of things wrong if you see a news article saying Ali Battir has signed up for solitude.
Right. It's not me. It's not me. Okay. Moving on.
But does that mean that you're actually an alien?
No, but what a great segue. China's Mars rover finds signs of recent water in the sand dunes. That's right, people.
Signs of recent water? What's recent?
So I read that, and you'd be so proud of me. Like, the number of the questions I now ask myself when reading articles like this, I swear, are like little Joe Battirs in the back of my head. Because that was the first question. I was like, wait a minute. Recent is very subjective, especially when it comes to the sciences.
And especially when you say in sand dunes, because dunes
is not watery.
Dunes are an aeolian, they're a wind-borne feature.
Right.
You don't get dunes in water.
Okay, the rover observed salt-rich dunes with cracks and crusts, which researchers said likely were mixed with melting morning frost or snow as recently as a few hundred thousand years ago.
Oh, okay. Fascinating. A few hundred thousand years. That's pretty recent.
Is that still significant? Like, is that, like, really... I guess it's significant enough to have an article about it, but... Is it safe to assume there was water on a lot of planets at one point of time, but it's more helpful if it's like water currently there?
Water currently there would definitely be more helpful. As far as getting that information,
that means that there could have been life 100,000 years
ago.
Yeah,
there could have been life. It, I think, is more important what we could use that information for is to start piecing together what more of the evolution and the tectonic history
of Mars.
And the historical story of Mars. Because then once you say, okay, well, this spot had water 200,000 years ago, what has happened? What was happening before that? Up to that point, and now what has been happening afterwards, so that we can start thinking about where would water be? Where would we want to send astronauts with the highest likelihood of being able to find water?
Right.
What area is going to be most hospitable for
in
for
terms
what
of like
we
drilling
need.
For water?
Yeah, maybe.
So, hypothetically speaking,
yeah, they're going to need to send a drill crew. Armageddon is the closest to a reality kind of situation there is.
Don't they go to like an asteroid?
I mean, they go to an asteroid. They send a drill crew from probably Gulf of Mexico out there. But realistically, it's going to be a bunch of drilling hands who end up on Mars. Just drilling wells, getting water.
Like, hypothetically speaking, I mean, because like, wouldn't it, I guess like it would... I'm just going to word vomit this and maybe you can make it coherent. But like, hypothetically speaking, if there was life on Mars hundreds of thousands of years ago, and in the likelihood of like fossils remaining, which I know fossils are not, they're kind of rare in the sense of like, it takes a lot of certain factors to create them. Would that be something that we would want to do is like look, like dig specifically looking for fossilized record? And then two, how would we know where to even look for that stuff? Which led me to my next mental leapfrog of how did we find the first fossils? This is how my brain works.
How did we find the first fossils?
Did we just like stumble upon a dinosaur bone and then start digging? Or like, how do people like, for you have archaeologist friends, right? Paleontologist friends?
Yeah, sure.
Do they just say, I think this would be a good place to dig for bones, and they just hope that there's something there? Or like someone stumbled upon it and then like they raised research funds to go. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
And there's a lot of questions in there.
So when it comes to finding fossils, it is kind of both of those. Most of the time you'll be walking along and boom, there's fossils. And then you start piecing together the story behind it. So when you look at something like, you can go out to West Texas and there are areas where you can just drive and be looking at the rocks. And next thing you know, you're picking out fossils that were a bunch of old animals. And you're like, wait, why are there all these things here? But then once you've done that, then you can start piecing together the story of like, okay, what are these animals? Where did they live? What water depth is this water? And like all of those kind of things.
Right. So in terms of Mars, would we just like find the water and we're like, animals lived in water. So this could be a good bet to start digging for dinosaur bones.
Yeah. You would basically reconstruct the geologic history and then guess where
animal life would
be. You think, well, not where animal life would have been, where animal life would have been, but also where they would have ended up after they died and sunk to the bottom of the ocean.
Right.
So there are a few other factors of needing to be in an anoxic environment where the bodies aren't going to break down and not leave anything.
Like, we would actually have to get to Mars, colonize Mars, and have enough situation up there to have little paleontologists just digging around Mars.
Well, yes and no. If we had a big hypothetical, if you sent an automated drill rig to Mars that could drill a well and pull out cuttings, and that's like broken up pieces of rock. As long as those pieces are large enough, you can find microscopic fossils.
Right.
So like bits of pollen. You can actually find pollen in the fossil record. You can find like whenever we find those like little tiny shells, those can be in the fossil record. And I'm even talking about smaller than the smallest shell you've ever found. Right. Like microscopic, that you need to look at in a microscope. Those things are what they call them, paleo markers. So as you're drilling, that was one of the first things that people would use to actually know where they are in the sequence as they're drilling down to then say, okay, where are we and where do we need to go to try and find oil? They would be looking for these microfossils to then say, okay, now we're in the Aptian, now we're in the Mistertian, and they keep going until they hit whatever section they are looking for.
What are shells made out of?
They are mostly a calcium carbonate.
How are shells made?
Most of them, the animals
build themselves.
Yeah, they're like, that's like, they are secreting that, building
that's
it.
That's what I thought.
It's like an exoskeleton almost.
Right. But beaches are all crashed shells, right?
Not all of them. The white sand beaches
are shells.
So
it's just a bunch of dead animals.
Yeah. You're swimming in a bunch of dead animals and animal poop. Yeah.
So when you lay out on that white sand,
it's mostly
beach,
dead. It's mostly
reading your book,
shells.
Lying on
shells.
The dead corpses of
millions
animal
of
life.
Millions of shellfish.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. You answered my question. Thanks.
Did you? Yeah. But I'm not talking like crazy science fiction when I'm talking about automated drilling.
There I know you're not.
There are there are drill rigs out there that are almost completely automated. Now the question is, how do you get one into a payload that can be sent to Mars? And here it would have to be automated to the point of not having somebody sit there watching it, but instead it would be like, okay, give it a 30-minute section of what it's going to do, send the data back, and then let's do it again.
Right, but how big are these drills?
There are ones that will drill oil and gas wells. So these are massive.
Okay, right.
Like so three, four story.
You can't put that on a spaceship.
Yeah. You would have to send something that is smaller, presumably something that's only going to go 10, 20, maybe 30 feet.
Right. So when are we planning on sending people to Mars?
I don't know.
It's in the next 15 years, right?
I think that was all part of the space police. So, I don't know. Either that or Elon's going to send people on his own. I don't remember. But we're supposed to be sending people to the moon real soon. Like next week, I think, or something, right?
Is it next week?
No.
Oh, no, it's not this, next week. This trip is not sending them. It's sending them around the moon. So, like Apollo 13 style.
Yeah. Yep.
Sending them around the moon. And then if that's successful, then the next, I guess, flight after them will go
land to the moon.
Do you think this four, do you think they're like stoked about it, or they're a little bit sad that they're not the ones who are going to go on to the moon?
I think that they're
just, like, the chance.
I think they're stoked. I think it's cool. For them.
Do you think that we have improved our technology enough to where we will be able to contact them on the dark side of the moon?
I don't know.
Because I guess, is it because we don't have a satellite?
It would have been that there was no way to actually get signal to them. So I would think that by now, although I can't remember if we do have a satellite orbiting the moon right now.
What? I'm looking that up. A satellite orbiting the moon?
Yeah. Because ultimately, that's what you would need. I know that there was a mission. I can't remember if it was a Mars orbiter or a moon orbiter.
Orbiting.
I think it was, and that may have been a Chinese satellite that was orbiting Mars.
Oh, hold on. The Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter.
Yeah. LRO.
Yeah, man.
Don't confuse LRO with LFO.
There are four active satellites orbiting the moon. The Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, Polar Mapping Orbit Mission by NASA, Artemis, two spacecraft.
Artemis.
Isn't that...
That's all part of the mission.
Oh.
Yeah. So
okay, so they are going to have communications on the dark side of the moon.
I would think that they would.
That's, yeah, so that's they were, fascinating.
Yeah, that's what... I guess they were sending... I thought that's what they said, is that they were sending an Artemis satellite as like the first...
Did you know that Artemis is an acronym?
Yeah. I don't know what it stands for, though.
Acceleration, reconnection, turbulence, and electrodynamics of the moon's interaction with the sun, Artemis.
Mm.
They really tried hard for that one.
I haven't been the first to say it, but I may be the first to say it on this podcast. The way that you win government contracts, whether it's...
Is with fancy acronyms?
It's with fancy acronyms.
Really?
Yeah. If I would say... 70% of FOAs that are not the FOAs, but the successful winning projects all have a cool acronym. Right now, there's, just saw it in...
Are you allowed to tell us this information?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just saw it in the last webinar that I was on this week. There were these two projects that were funded. all about drilling efficiency. One of them, their acronym is GLADE. Is that cool? I don't know. But they won. The acronym, the project that I was on that we still are like associated with, the acronym, INGENIUS. Like, that's a long acronym.
That's a really long acronym.
Yeah.
Was it spelled correctly?
Yeah, it is innovative and novel geothermal exploration. How far did I get? I got to E. and then N.
Wait, geothermal's not part of the... You said geothermal, but it's not part of the acronym?
No, it is. In innovative and novel geothermal exploration.
Oh.
And then other stuff.
Whatever. That's dumb. The acronyms are dumb. Well, that's so silly.
Hey, you think they're dumb, but every single time I'm like, hey, guys, we need a good acronym. And then everybody's always like, meh, I don't think so. And guess what happens?
GLADE don't get funded. Wins.
Then GLADE wins. So I'm just saying, like, if you want to apply for government funding, make sure you got your acronym game down. Get the acronym, get the gunning. I was going to try and come up with something funny there. Get the acronym.
Get you said the gunny.
Get the goods.
Oh my gosh. Let's wrap this up. Who's our sponsor today?
Our sponsor of the week is DFW Airport Innovation Week. They're giving out shirts at Earth Day. They got some fun colors. Kind of feels like an 80s vibe. I have no idea what it's about. But you know what? DFW Airport, they're really stepping up their game. They're trying to innovate. They had a huge booth at Earth Day. And I think that they are one of the largest contiguous nature areas.
Really?
Within the DFW proper. Simply because they need that much like
airspace or whatever.
Yeah, they need that much like a buffer between the airport and everybody else. And it's all natural. So wow. They have like a crazy wildlife habitat there. So it's
Wait, do they really?
Yeah. Yeah, they've got all sorts of stuff.
Wow.
It's pretty cool for them.
I will say DFW Airport, we saw someone had used one of your luggage carts and abandoned it in Mockingbird Station. So yeah. That's not where that was supposed to go. So you should probably send somebody to go pick that up.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, it may end up in one of the creeks. And that's not really...
That's
you know,
not good for the environment.
It's not Earth-friendly.
Right.
But, you know, beggars can't be choosers. Not relevant here, but, you know, people say that.
And with that...
With that, we are going to end this podcast. But here we're going to go.
Bye.
Bye-bye.